Support for Class Dismissed comes from School Status. School Status helps educators at every level take control of student data for increased outcomes and meaningful stakeholder engagement. Find out more at schoolstatus.com. You are listening to Class Dismissed, episode 261, and I'm your host, Nick Ortigo. This episode, Emotional Intelligence. Where did the idea start, and just how new of a concept is this? Plus, we'll give you a useful acronym to help you teach emotional intelligence. Dismissed is the podcast that inspires educators through story. Each episode, we cover some of the hottest topics and news in the world of education. Plus, we hear from a guest with a bright idea for education that you can apply in your community. This episode, how about an educational podcast for students? Our guest has one. Stay with us. Hello, friends. Nick Ortigo here. I'm joined by my friend, assistant superintendent, and co-host of the Class Dismissed podcast, Dr. Christina Pollard. Christina, how are you doing today?
Fantastic. It's that time of the year.
The spring break
is in the air.
That's yeah. Right. Yes. My family, we're headed on a little spring break trip in about a week, and we're looking forward to that. And I hope everyone else is going to have a great break as well. I mean, they're kind of scattered. You never know, like, if depending on where you are listening from and what part of the country you're in, everyone's spring break hits at a different time.
True, but whatever, wherever you are and whatever you do, find some time for rest and self-care. It's so important for educators right now.
That's right. And one thing we're talking about is kind of in that vein, a little bit different, but it's emotional intelligence. And that is a term that we hear a lot now, right?
True. Very true.
Let me ask you this. When's like the first time it kind of came on your radar, the idea of emotional intelligence, best you can remember?
Oh my goodness, more than 10 years ago for sure.
Okay. Yeah. So it apparently is, I would call it a new psychological concept for lack of a better way of describing it. And in fact, emotional intelligence originally can be traced back to a 1990 article by Salovey and Mayer. They argued that emotions could be utilized to enhance one's life, but it didn't really even become what I would call popular until Daniel Goleman wrote a book called, quote, Emotional Intelligence, Why It Can Matter More Than IQ, and that was published in 1995. And it was his work that kind of like challenged that Freudian perspective that emotionals reside in the unconscious. And instead, he's saying emotions are manageable and play a crucial role in human behavior and decision making. So
go ahead. Very much so critical in leadership.
Right. Critical in leadership. And I think it's something that I know most schools are trying to teach this, right?
True. True. We talk to assistant principals and principals about, you know, managing their emotions and making decisions based on policy and what's best for children versus, you know, what we want, what we like, how people make us feel. And oftentimes it's very hard when you're leading and you're dealing with difficult people. It's hard to try to separate, you know, yourself from that and make sound decisions.
I guess like in the realm of education, like the concept of social and emotional learning, you know, that is kind of taking emotional intelligence into that education realm. Are there, you know, you hear so much about it, and I don't want to call it a buzzword because I think it is more than that. But do you think that actual like programs tied to social emotional learning are something we're seeing in schools, or is it more of just a concept?
Oh, it's definitely, you're definitely seeing it. I mean, even in our state, we have a full list of standards to support social and emotional learning. And one of the big things that we have to help people understand is that it's not a standalone concept. It should be embedded in everything we do, everything we teach, all of our actions. And when you've been properly trained, you learn that. Understanding emotional intelligence is also about understanding how to deal with different types of people and giving you an opportunity just how to navigate them and how to make those difficult conversations work for you.
I agree with you 100%. I'm going to go on a little sidebar here. Like I had to work at emotional intelligence. It's not something that I think came natural to me until I kind of, you know, like how am I feeling? But like you just said, how are other people programmed is kind of something that that's helped me a lot. I've found that the more I kind of understand different personality types, it gives me grace with that person. So if like a person may be a little aggressive, it might be the way they're programmed, right? And so maybe they're being aggressive because they want to protect their friends and everybody around them. So I look at that differently as opposed to that person just being aggressive, right? Like they're being protective of their friends, you know? Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And I think that I've come a very long way. I can think back to the very beginning of my experiences as a leader, and it was survival. You know what I mean? You do the best that you can with the tool belt that you're equipped with. But over time, not only do you get to understand different types of people that you're leading, you truly get to understand yourself and what makes you tick, and learning how to set those things aside when decision making.
Right. And my wife and I, like, we try to figure out each other's personality. She knows that my personality type, I need like alone time every now and then. So she gives me that space, you know? So I think it really goes a long way to kind of understand that about people. There was an article that I wanted to bring up, and it was in Educational Leadership. It's Mark Brackett from Yale University. And he says that there's actually an acronym that he teaches for emotional intelligence. Okay. And he calls it RULER, like a measuring stick, ruler. You ready to go through these? RULER?
Yes, let's work on those steps.
The first one, R, he says, recognizing emotions in your own thoughts and recognizing others' emotions through facial expressions, body language, voice, tone, and behavior.
I agree. And that's kind of along the lines about what I talked about a few moments ago. Really
Absolutely.
Understanding yourself and how you relate to the situation, and sometimes pulling yourself out, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. It's like, all right, I'm here for this person. It doesn't really matter what I need. I need to understand them.
Correct.
All right, the second letter, U, understanding the causes and consequences of our emotions.
Yes, because you gave a great example about why some people react the way that they do. Perhaps they're defending, they're trying to protect. But in other ways, we could talk about those who have lived years of survival, and that's the only thing that they know. And now maybe they're in a time in their lives where they can settle down and enjoy the moment, but they haven't figured that out yet. And we just need to bend for them.
Right. No, I agree. The L in RULER is labeling emotions with precise feeling words. It says, quote, when we label emotions precisely, things go better.
Well, we get a better understanding of what we're dealing with, how we feel, how another person feels, so that we can react appropriately. And I think even using the word react, we can be proactive in our approach instead of reactive.
And I'm going to jump in before I go to the last two letters. This article also cites an app that is free. It was created by the founder of Pinterest, and it's funded by donations, and it is called How We Feel. And I downloaded it just because I was like, all right, I'll give it a try, right? Like I can maybe come in better touch with myself. And it's actually a longer process. It's not like you can do it real fast, but you hop into it and it has like a quadrant of emotions. And it's like, starts real broad. Are you kind of feeling energetic in this way, or energetic in this way, or are you feeling lethargic in this way, or lethargic in this way? And you kind of like narrowed it in on the way you're feeling, and then you log it. And then it's like, all right, well, what are you doing right now? Like, what's making you feel that way? And you log that. And then it's supposed to kind of track those, your trend, and offer some feedback, which I haven't gotten that far and I'm kind of excited to. But anyways, if somebody wants to try that out, it's called How We Feel, and it was recommended in the article we're talking about now.
Well, of course, I'm going to have to check that app out.
No doubt. And then, so the E is expressing emotions according to social norms and cultural contexts. Right? I kind of as well.
That makes me want to hear that one more time.
Sure. Expressing emotions according to social norms and cultural context.
So that's really understanding where you are and who you're dealing with. And to me, let's just go ahead and point that out, that sometimes you respond differently if you're in the work area versus being at home. Or even, let's just use some other examples. If you're in an organization or social setting, if you're in a church setting, everything requires a different reaction.
Right. And so we are specifically talking about emotions, but it reminds me of the time when we were moving away from Mississippi to Florida, and some close friends of mine in Mississippi were like, Nick, you can't tell those inappropriate jokes with your new friends until you get to know them a little bit better. And so,
well, it's true.
It's true, right?
You like, you got to know your audience. The situation, that's correct.
So I'll sadly say I've yet to meet the friend with who I can express the inappropriate jokes to yet. So that is my goal for 2024.
I certainly hope you run across a few of those friends.
Right. The last letter is R, of course, in ruler, and it is regulating emotions with helpful strategies.
And, you know, I just want to point out, it's so important for us as adults to understand how to regulate our emotions and what kind of strategies to use, because it's important for us to teach young people how to do the same thing all the way down to elementary grade levels.
Right. And the title of this article, again, it was in educational leadership. It is giving educators permission to feel. I'm going to link to this article because it is specific to educators. You can find it in our show notes. And of course, the acronym and the app will be there as well.
I love it. I love it.
Are you ready for today's bright idea?
Let's go.
Our guest in today's bright idea segment has created an incredible podcast titled Who Smarted? And it's designed to make learning digestible and fun for the little ones, elementary school students. But this is not the first hit project he's had in the student education space. Jerry Kolber is also the co-creator of the hit Netflix show Brainchild, and before that, Brain Games. Jerry, it's a pleasure to have you on Class Dismissed.
Likewise, it's a real pleasure to be here.
First off, I got to say, if anyone hasn't seen Brainchild yet, you need to go watch it. I mean, we've watched the season over and over again, and I'll tell you this about the type of show it is. It's the type of show that your child puts on the TV, and you're like, you know, cooking in the kitchen, and next thing you know, you're into this show. Like, you can't help but watch it. And then I had family over around Christmas, and I was like, hey, you guys got to watch the show. The room was quiet. I had all these adults watching an episode of Brainchild in the room. I mean, I can't get it everyone quiet in the room during the Super Bowl, but for whatever reason, this show just like pulls people in. I mean, kudos to y'all and what you did with that show. Check it out on Netflix. I mean, you've got to be proud of that, right?
Very, very proud of that show. Yeah, the whole team did an incredible job. And that was our goal going into any kind of children's show, is we want to make children's show that parents don't find annoying and hopefully actually enjoy watching. Because a lot of stuff that kids love is just, you know, you just, parents want to like cover their ears and claw their eyes out when they're right. watching it. So it's really gratifying to hear that, you know, you're loving it and your family loved it.
Yeah. And I mean, as you watch it, and I mean, I'm learning a lot. I mean, you did an episode on germs, and I think you probably recorded this pre-pandemic, but it was also very informative about like germs and bacteria and clean surfaces and so forth. That one was great. And I think what you're doing now with your current project, Who Smarted the Podcast, it's kind of similar in the way you're kind of reaching out to children, right? And making it fun.
Absolutely. In fact, Who Smarted grew directly out of Brainchild. You know, we had a wonderful time making Brainchild and a great time working with Netflix on it. And we ended up not doing a second season of that show, but we had so much content, and we'd done so much research with educators and with kids on how to make learning fun, that when the pandemic happened and we knew everybody was, you know, sitting and staring at screens all day, we were like, can we make a podcast that takes, you know, all the DNA of Brainchild and all the fun of learning and makes it accessible in an audio format for kids. And that is how Who Smarted was born.
Okay. And I'm going to ask the immature question. Is Who Smarted kind of a playoff of like Who Farted? Is that what you're going for?
Oh my then? God. Yeah. Oh my God. I never noticed.
It's not? Okay. So I'm the immature one.
Of course
one.
It is. Of
okay.
course it is.
Okay.
Of
yeah,
course
yeah.
it is.
Okay,
of course
good. You totally had me there. I was probably a weirdo.
No, we are all inner 6-year-olds over here at Atomic. And, you know, like, we know our audience, and we thought that was a really fun title. The kids would get a kick out of it. And I think they do.
Well, and
we get
and
to
I
say
think...
things like, we love that your families all smarting together. You know, it's a fun pun.
Okay. So tell our listeners, which is mostly K-12 educators, like, give me some topics that you cover. And these are, I'll say, digestible topics that you do in like 10 to 15 minutes. But just throw out some, like, if one of their students goes over to the listening section, throws on the earphones, listens to Who Smarted, what are they going to be learning about?
Sure. So we've done everything from covering gravity to microwaves. We've done episodes on Madame Curie. We've done episodes on all kinds of food, like broccoli and We've done episodes on history. We do episodes on anything that a kid might encounter in a STEM class, as well as culture and history that's relevant to kids. And as you said, you know, we really make it bite-sized. So everything is 15 minutes or less. And we've done 200 episodes at this point. So
yeah, you're really churning them out like 3 days a week, 2 or 3 days a week, aren't you?
Yes, we do three days a week. And we've been doing that since the beginning. And, you know, it's a fast cadence for us. But we found that, you know, because kids consume media so quickly, that it's been a way to just become a fixture in their lives and something that they keep asking for and going back to. So we've kept it up.
I have a pretty good understanding of video production and audio production. This is a well-produced podcast that's great for kids because there's lots of sound effects and music and that's constantly interwoven throughout the entire episode.
Psst. Hey, Smarty Pants, did you know that you're mysterious? It's true. How so, you ask? Well, there's something you do, maybe a little, maybe a lot, that's quite mysterious. In fact, it's not just you that does it. Pretty much every human being who has ever walked the planet, including everyone you know, has done it at some point in their life. Any idea what I'm talking about? Here's a hint. Did you say crying?
You must have a team of people helping you, because I can't imagine churning out that content with just one or two people.
Oh, yeah. We have a great team. I mean, it's actually mostly the team is people who worked on either Brain Games or Brainchild, who love working with us, and we love working with them. So, you know, we've writers, we've educators, our actors are all over the country working, you know, everyone's working remotely still. So we probably have, around 24 people working on the project. And then, our main audio engineer, Josh, is here in Brooklyn. And then his helper, Max, is over in Copenhagen now. So everyone's scattered around, but we figured out how to make this, remotely and with a great team of people.
Yeah, we live in this great time where you can probably just cut stuff, share files, you know, piece it all together. I mean, I guess I envision this for me as like, if I was in the classroom and I had elementary school students, it's like, all right, the classwork is done. Students are finishing at different times. For those students that maybe finish a little early, like, hey, go over here and listen to an episode and answer this maybe, you know, 5-question quiz that goes along with it. Almost like reading an AR book, except you're listening to a podcast. Is that, how do you envision students digesting this?
So we've definitely heard of teachers using it that way. We know that we have a huge, you know, we have like, I think 10,000 plus homeschool families that are using the podcast in their homes and using it as conversation starter around STEM topics. And we're hearing from a lot of educators that they're using it at the beginning of a class as a kickstarter into a topic, mm-hmm. because the episodes do this kind of very 100,000 foot introduction. So we know that, you know, people have used our sleep episode to talk about sleep and dreaming. We know that they've used our, we have an episode that we did on your nose and your smell that we know teachers have used to kick off conversation around the olfactory system. So we hear it getting used a lot as a way to get the kids hooked into a topic that might be a little challenging, and then it becomes a conversation starter that leads into whatever the planned curriculum is.
No. You, correct me if I'm wrong, were you a co-producer of Queer Eye?
No, I was not a co-producer, but I was the line producer of the original 50 episodes, like back in, gosh, it was that 2003.
Yeah, okay.
So I was there from the very beginning. I was like a production accountant, and then I became the line producer.
That's really cool. So, all right, so you know TV, and you've had success in TV with that, and of course, mm-hmm. Brainchild and Brain Games. Why were you like, I'm going to do a podcast instead?
Well, a couple of reasons. First of all, I've always loved audio. Like when I was in high school, even in junior high, I used to be on like the junior high radio. I would make like little radio programs. I think audio allows a connection between the listener and the content that is a little more special in some ways than television. And by that, I mean, because you're not seeing the visuals, it actually engages your imagination in a way that you might not engage if you're watching television, because television, we fill in, you know, every gap that you got. video, you've got audio, it's music, it's all there. The other thing with audio is that, especially for these kind of educational bits, it's just easier for a parent if they want to throw something on in the 15 minute they're driving to school or right before bed. If a teacher wants to use it in the class, it's just, it's simpler as a technology than bringing in a video and everything like that. And the last thing we found when we were researching before we started making Who Smarted, we found a lot of research that shows that children are able to comprehend at a grade level as much as 2 to 3 grades higher with audio than with text.
Wow.
And it's because your conversational skills develop a little faster than your reading skills at that age. So that was a really interesting information. And then there's also a lot of research that shows that children are much more likely to engage in conversation around a topic if they encounter it in a conversation or audio format rather than a textbook. So all of that was just like signals to us saying, you know what, let's try making an audio podcast for kids that builds on all of that research and all of the fun that we think can be had in audio. And that is why we started it. Plus it was the pandemic and we couldn't shoot any TV shows.
That's a good point.
When we started this. So we were just like, well, we have all this talent and this ability. Let's do something with it. So that was the final impetus for it, was the fact that we literally couldn't shoot TV shows for most of the first year of the pandemic.
Well, and as I mentioned, I mean, your experience, you have a history of doing this type of entertainment. You must have already done some background research into like, all right, is this market being targeted yet? Did you see a lot of people really targeting? I mean, what age are you targeting? Like 6 to 10?
That's exactly the age range, is okay. 6 to 10. And no, we saw almost nobody creating audio for that age group. And part of the reason for that is it's a very challenging age group to sell advertising against for, you know, logistical and ethical reasons, mm-hmm. Especially if you're making something you want to use in a classroom or trusted in a home. And so when we started this project, it was never with the goal, you know, Who Smarter wasn't started to become, you know, a big money-making opportunity for Atomic. It was really just for the fun of creating this podcast for kids and families to use. And so once by sort of taking the being not worried about advertising revenue out of the equation, it let us just go nuts and have fun. And there's really only 2 or 3 other podcasts in this space that I would say are doing education well and fun for this age group, and none of them are coming out with the frequency that we do.
All right, so Jerry, you're the voice of the show, at least maybe not all the like you said, you have some actors and sound effects and like different actors that kind of come in, but you're the narrator, right?
I am the trusty narrator.
And so what is your favorite episode you've recorded so far? Is that hard? Is it like picking your kids?
No, it's funny you asked that, because I actually just recorded it, and I don't know if it's come out yet.
I listened to a few.
I really enjoyed the seatbelts episode.
I don't think I saw the seatbelt one in there. The most recent one.
I don't think
one.
It's come out yet.
Okay, all right.
But listen, if you'd asked me a month ago, I would have told you it was the Do Animals Cry episode.
That was the one that was very recently. Month. Yeah, Do Animals Cry, yeah. Which I found really interesting, because I didn't realize that we're, as humans, I guess we're the only ones that cry for because of our feelings, right?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Throughout your life, you'll shed tears about 2 to 4 times a month on average. Maybe you did some crying today or earlier in the week. Maybe you're doing it right now. I hope you're not crying now. It's hard to cry and smart at the same time. But the truth is, we could all use a good cry every now and then, right? Now, I know what you're thinking. Crying is for babies. But it's also for when you're really sad or upset.
Oh, no. I can't believe my favorite team is going to lose the game.
But strangely enough, you might also cry when you're happy.
Oh, man. What a comeback. We won. We won. I'm so happy.
You might cry if you're in pain, like getting a shot from the doctor.
Ow! That hurt. Oh, can I get a lollipop?
Or if you get and I enjoyed that one. I liked the script, and I also it was the first time they made me the writers made me cry on the microphone. Like, so I
fake so cry. Were you actually like you had to dig down and think of something sad?
I'm not going to tell you whether I was fake crying or real crying. I think you should listen to it and see. No, I was fake crying, but I think I did a pretty good job.
Well, and tell me about the seatbelt. What can we look forward to without giving it away?
Well, seatbelts was really interesting because I didn't know the history of seatbelts. And the fact that seatbelts didn't really become mandated until pretty deep into the existence of cars was really mind-blowing. And it gets into the technology of seatbelts and why they're so important. And, you know, for me, like, the script was great. I mean, I really love all of our scripts, but I really enjoyed that script. And I like the fact that we were able to talk about history and science and also deliver an important message for kids' safety about wearing seatbelts, you know, all in this very fun episode.
When you're building a podcast like this, who are the students that you're hoping to reach? Is it the already curious student, or is it maybe the kid that has trouble learning out of a book? Is that kind of your driving force?
We are always, always aiming all of our projects at the person who would consider themselves or be considered unlikely to like the show based on the fact that they say they're not into science or they have struggled with science or anything like that. So we know that the kids who are already into science and curious, they're going to come along with us. Same thing when we did Brain Games. We knew that adults who are already into neuroscience and the human brain, they're going to watch. You know, they're going to come because they're curious. We're always thinking of how do we get to the people who, you know, don't think that they're into neuroscience, or how do we get to the kids who don't think that they're science kids? That's who we're always, always thinking of 100%. We just want to have impact there. We want to expose kids who thought they struggle with science or aren't into science. We want to get them excited about science. And all of a sudden they're, you know, we get letters and messages all the time from parents saying that like their two teenage girls are now listening to our podcast and now they're interested in science where they weren't before. Like that's to great. Us, that is like, that's the ultimate like feedback and win for us is that. So,
well, yeah. And I mean, just to kind of back you up on that, I'm going to read some of the titles. Which video game character has appeared in the most games, right? So if you have this kid that just wants to play video games, like you might find that interesting, right? Mm-hmm. What are gummy bears made out of, you know, mm-hmm. for the kid that loves sugar? Or kind of going off of Who Smarted in the name, why do people laugh at farts? Like, you know, mm-hmm. so if you maybe have this, you know, young 7-8-year-old boy who thinks farts are funny, you know, they might find that episode entertaining, right?
Yeah. And then that episode also gets into, you know, what it really is about is why we laugh at all. And all of a sudden you got them in from that title, but now they're learning about how the brain works. They're learning about emotional triggers, learning about social cues. So it's all, you know, it's all in there, but they're coming in for the fart jokes.
Man, Jerry, I tell you what, I love what you guys are doing. I mean, there's so much, I'm going to just go ahead and say it, trash out there in the world of entertainment, or even just go to like YouTube Kids. Like, I don't know. I sometimes I'm listening to my daughter watch kids play video games. I'm like, oh, come on, we gotta do something else. This is like good quality content that's, you know, where people can learn, not just kids. So, I mean, again, just really kudos to you, what you've done with this show, Who Smarted, as well as Brainchild and Brain Game. So if you haven't watched Brainchild on Netflix, like it's there. And if you have anyone who's, I don't know, I would say any kid, just turn it on, give it a shot. You're going to love it. And then of course, check out Who Smarted as well. If somebody wants to listen to Who Smarted, is it just like wherever podcasts are, or should they go to a specific Spotify or Apple? How's that work?
No, you can get, we've made sure that Who Smarted is available on any podcast app. It's also at our website, whosmarted.com. If you don't use podcast apps, you can listen to the episodes right there on our website.
I wish you guys the best of luck and success with the show. I mean, are you guys in for the long haul? Or are y'all just going to keep churning these out?
Oh yeah, we're not going anywhere. We're having a great time doing it. And the more feedback we get from the audience, the more excited we are to keep doing it.
I got to ask you though, I mean, you've always been behind the scenes and now you're front and center. Like, how do you feel about that so far?
I'm fine with it. It was a bit of an accident because I did the demo episode and everybody was like, oh, you should just keep doing them. And, you know, little did I know that the show was going to blow up as it has, but I'm actually having fun doing it. I like being the voice of the show, and I feel like the show is written in sort of the way I would speak to kids and want to teach them anyways. So yeah, I'm into it.
Check out Who Smarted on anywhere podcasts are available. You're listening to Jerry Kolber. And Jerry, are you ready for our pop quiz?
I am.
All right. First question. If students could only go to school for one subject, which subject should it be?
Geometry.
I don't know that anyone's ever said geometry. At least it's been a while. We've done hundreds of episodes. Why geometry?
I think geometry is awesome because when you start talking about geometry and looking around the room and how shapes are everywhere and how they fit together, it becomes a real entry point into how science kind of lays on top of everything that you see.
What are we not teaching in school that we should be teaching?
Critical thinking.
What does every child deserve?
A chance to do what they're best at.
What's the biggest challenge for today's educators?
Competing with the amount of entertainment and information that children are consuming constantly and making their classrooms as interesting as possible.
What's the best gift to give an educator?
A vacation.
Which teacher? I mean, it's true.
Or a trophy.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly.
We've been having discussions like, how do you make teachers' lives, you know, all of us want a more flexible work environment, right? Like, we want to be able to run to the doctor or work from home or wash our clothes in between, you know, stuff. It's like, how can we ever give teachers that? I don't know the answer.
I honestly said after the pandemic that they should be erecting statues of teachers in every square in every American city. I mean,
no doubt.
Teachers are going through right now is insane, and they're incredible.
Which teacher changed your life?
Oh man, I had so many. Mr. Warren. I'm going to go with Mr. Warren, my English teacher in high school, who was supposed to teach us AP English, which we all thought was going to be, you know, deep dives into Shakespeare, and instead used the Beatles, Iggy Pop, and Don McLean, all this classic rock, as our curriculum, and had us do deep dives into that. And it really made me understand how, you know, how culture could be relevant in a classroom.
That's really powerful for you to say that, because that's kind of the feel I get from a lot of your work is the same way. It's like, all right, how can we make this boring topic relevant and interesting? So, wow. Yeah. So I guess he deserves the credit, right? Or at least some of it.
He's definitely a big part of it. Yeah.
Right. All right. And last question, which book did you recently read, love, and want to recommend to our listeners?
I read this book called In Praise of Slowness by Carl Honore, H-O-N-O-R-E. That was all about finding ways to slow down in a culture that is all about speed.
Wow. I'm going to have to check that one out. I think a lot of people, you know, feel that way. Is it almost like a... Is it like a Buddhist background to it, or is it, or would you say no?
I wouldn't say that there's an obviously, I mean, he might be Buddhist. It was more about just finding ways to, finding moments of slowness and stillness, in your life without it being very, you know, overly spiritualized or ritualized.
Yeah. It looks like he's got some TED Talks and stuff out there as well. Definitely going to have to check that one out. Again, it was, In Praise of Slowness, if anybody wants to catch that one. Jerry, thank you so much for joining us. And really, I wish you the best of luck with the show. It's so good. Great for teachers to introduce to their students or just parents to introduce to their children.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me on. We love what you guys are doing as well, and appreciate any help that anyone can offer to educators is fantastic. So thank you so much.
That's going to do it for this episode of Class Dismissed. If you want to send us an idea or comment, remember you can always email us at info@classdismissedpodcast.com or tweet us at Class Dismiss. We're here to support educators, but we need your support as well. So please subscribe to the show, and we'd also appreciate it if you could leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. On behalf of all the good people working at School Status and Christina, representing all those educators out there, thank you for listening. I'm Nick Ortego, and I'll talk with you next week.
Class dismissed!